all of our volunteers for doing a great job and for making KBOO a great community and radio station. And thank you to all of the restaurants that provided food. For more information on them, visit kboo.fm/food. We are proud to be your radio station and honored to have your support this fall membership drive. Thank you.
Good morning, KBOO. This is Jen Davis. I am the KBOO Vice President on the KBOO Board of Directors, and I am here today interviewing Jerry Greenfield, who is co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream. Jerry Greenfield is in town stumping for Measure 92, which calls for the labeling of GMO foods. Is Ben in Colorado right now helping to promote their measure to label GMO foods?
I think Ben is actually back in Vermont right now, and he's probably enjoying the fall foliage in Vermont.
Very nice. So can you clarify? I know that some of our listeners have confusion. We know that you and Ben co-founded Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream,
yep.
And then in 2000, Unilever bought Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, but you still have an affiliation with the company. Can you talk about your affiliation?
Sure. So as you mentioned, the company was sold in 2000, not something that we wanted to have happen. We would have preferred to stay independent, but the company was a public company at the time, which meant anybody could purchase shares. So since that time, Ben and I are employed at the company. We're employees. We're not involved in the management or the operations. We have jobs where we have no responsibility and no authority.
And you get to eat ice cream all day, right?
You know, Ben and I are members of one of the most exclusive clubs in the world, the Ben & Jerry's Free Ice Cream for Life Club.
Ah.
So,
wow.
You know, I think it's good for the company if Ben and I continue to eat a lot of ice cream. I think that speaks well of things.
Not too bad a job, really. The World Health Organization defines GMOs. Let's just jump right into that. As genetically engineered or modified foods, as foods derived from organisms whose genetic material or DNA has been modified in a way that does not occur naturally. For example, through the introduction of a gene from a different organism. So I thought that Ben & Jerry's liked unusual and surprising things in their ice cream. What's wrong with GMOs in your ice cream?
Well, so there's a couple things. We do like surprising things in our ice cream. They are generally along the lines of big chunks of cookies or candies and not genetically engineered ingredients. And, you know, some people may like GMOs, some people may not like GMOs. The whole point of Measure 92 is to be transparent about it, to tell people what is in your products. So it's simply about transparency and a consumer's right to know so that they can make an informed decision about what they're purchasing and what they're eating and what we're feeding our families. And gosh, don't we have a right to know what's in our food?
Right. And so can you describe for our listeners the basic parameters of Measure 92? Because I know that some people have confusion about what is covered under this measure and what foods are not covered and so on.
So what's covered is foods you buy in the grocery store, which are basically the foods that are now currently have nutritional labeling on them. And all this would do, it would require a few words on a package if there are genetically engineered ingredients. It would be something like may contain genetic engineered ingredients or, you know, something very, very simple. It's not a skull and crossbones. It's not going to scare anyone away. It's just simply letting people know. There's labeling in 64 countries. This is not some bizarre, weird idea. There's labeling in all of Europe. There's labeling in Japan. There's labeling in Russia. There's labeling in China. There's labeling in Saudi Arabia. I mean, it's kind of very, very common. And the opponents are really big food companies and agribusiness companies like Monsanto and Dow Chemical, who for one reason or another don't want to disclose what's in their products.
So in June 2014, the Vermont State Legislature passed a GMO labeling law.
Yay!
That's right. And I was interested to learn that the State Agricultural Board was instrumental in introducing and lobbying for the bill, along with lots of Vermont farmers and food purveyors like Ben and Jerry's. So why is GMO labeling important to farmers?
I think farmers want to be able to control how they do their operations. And with GMO seeds that are patented and owned by Monsanto, farmers have to buy new seeds every year. They can't continue to do that. And it's essentially a move towards corporate farming, away from small family farmers. And you know, if you're trying to support local agriculture, small agriculture, the whole local food movement, GMOs is not helpful to that.
So two of the most commonly GMO crops grown in the U.S. are corn and soy, and they're used largely for meat and dairy feed. And these GMO products are also used in ethanol and many processed foods. The current GMO labeling law proposed in Oregon would exempt labeling for dairy and meat from GMO-fed animals. So will Ben and Jerry's cows be fed GMO corn and soy?
They currently are. We're trying to find an alternative to that. You know, it's not that those foods are exempt from labeling. What it really means is if a cow eats corn from that's GMO, the cow itself does not become genetically modified. And so the meat and the dairy products from the cow are not genetically modified. It's just the feed that they eat.
Yeah, and it's increasingly difficult from my research to find non-GMO corn and soy. So that becomes an issue.
It is, and Ben and Jerry's is actually working in the Northeast with a bunch of dairy companies to see if we can band together so that we create enough of a demand for non-GMO mm-hmm. feed. And I think that's the way to do it.
Because demand will drive what farmers grow.
It is working that way. You know, it's a wonderful system in that regard.
So another major ingredient in ice cream, of course, is sugar. And about half of the U.S. sugar supply comes from GMO Roundup Ready sugar beets. And they're genetically engineered to withstand multiple applications of Roundup, the glyphosate, the weed killer. And in 2008, Roundup Ready beets were introduced. By 2010, 95% of the sugar beets in the U.S. were GMO Roundup Ready beets that were created by Monsanto. Does Ben & Jerry's use GMO sugar beet sugar?
No, Ben & Jerry's is transitioning to be all non-GMO. We're about 85% non-GMO now by volume. I think of all our flavors, 30 flavors are now non-GMO. And we'll be done with this conversion by the end of the year. So by the end of 2014, Ben & Jerry's will be all non-GMO.
So the other sugar options really for sugar are pretty much cane sugar. Is that pretty much what you're using then?
You know, maybe Chris knows.
Well, as you know, Jerry, as part of our transition to source non-GMO ingredients, we're also transitioning to full fair trade certification. So all of the sugar we use across our entire product portfolio is fair trade certified cane sugar. So okay. Beet sugar is not an issue for our products.
Okay. I talked about beet sugar because just to let you all know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but that's a very serious issue for Oregon farmers. In Jackson and Josephine counties, we have one of the few premium places in the world to grow non-GMO contaminated organic seeds. And this is from research by Friends of Family Farmers, a farming advocacy organization. And in this region, particularly Beta vulgaris, which interestingly, is a plant from which both Swiss chard and sugar beets comes from. It's the same plant, only Swiss chard is the strain that's selected for large leaves, and sugar beets is the strain of Beta vulgaris that is selected for large, white, sweet roots.
Wow.
Yeah, and so the introduction of GMO sugar beets to this region was actually considered very serious for farmers like Frank Morton, who's an organic seed farmer. And he brought a suit against the USDA for releasing GMO sugar beets without an environmental impact statement. So folks may not be aware that two crops of the same family can interbreed, cross-pollination must occur, and that requires pollen to go from one crop to the other crop. And that can happen via birds, bees, other insects, animals, wind, even accidental human transport. And a recent study found GMO pollen, for example, moved as far as 21 miles.
Wow.
And scientists have found in the upper atmosphere, pollen can travel for hundreds, even thousands of miles. So in 2010, a judge revoked the USDA's approval for GMO sugar beet seed. Frank Morton actually won his case when he brought it against the USDA because they did not do an very thorough environmental impact review before they released the seed. But interestingly, because many of their farmers sell their crops abroad, if his crops become contaminated, if his Swiss chard seeds become contaminated with GMO Beta vulgaris pollen, then he could lose his entire sales, because increasingly around the world, not only are people labeling GMOs, but they're banning GMO crops. But what was particularly interesting is the USDA still allowed the sugar beets to be grown, the GMO sugar beets to be grown, because after 2 years, after the introduction of GMO sugar beets, the USDA said that there were not enough non-GMO sugar beet seeds in the country to supply the farmers who were producing the GMO sugar beet sugar. So this is a really astounding scenario that our seed supply could change within 2 years for a crop that's providing half of the nation's sugar. GMO sugar beet is half of the nation's sugar. So how would a scenario like this affect Ben and Jerry's?
You know, I don't know it would specifically affect Ben and Jerry's, but, you know, Ben and Jerry's, in terms of sourcing out ingredients, needs to be able to find supplies of non-GMO foods. And, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the demand for those are increasing. And I think so long as the demand increases, there'll be a way to make it happen, because this movement to be, well, to have labeling in the first place is a consumer-driven movement. This is not something that businesses are forcing. This is not something that there is some organized organization behind it. It's everyday consumers who are saying, we just want to know what's in our food. And it's growing across the country. You mentioned Vermont passing a law earlier this year. This was the first no strings attached GMO labeling law in the country. We've got this ballot initiative here in Oregon. There's activity in about 30 states around the country. So this is something that's coming, and it's going to happen.
Can you explain a little bit more about what no strings attached means in the Vermont labeling law?
Yeah, there were a couple of states earlier in New England that passed GMO labeling laws, Maine and Connecticut. But there is a trigger involved in those, that there need to be other states that passed GMO labeling that had enough population, I think it's 20 million people, in order for those laws to go into effect. And Vermont's law has no trigger at all. It's scheduled to go into effect, I think, July of 2016. And so there's nothing holding it back.
Is Measure 92 in Oregon also no strings attached?
It is.
So when this piece of legislation passed, there were threats from the coalition of chemical companies, which call themselves Bio, interestingly enough. That's Monsanto, Dow, Syngenta. et cetera, and the Grocery Manufacturers Association, they threatened to sue the state of Vermont to repeal this GMO labeling law. What's the status of that?
Well, they not only threatened to sue the state, they have indeed threatened the state. And so one of the interesting things Vermont did was they set up a mechanism whereby money can be raised for this legal defense fund from average everyday people. So the state itself will be putting money into the legal fight. But if somebody in the state of Kansas wants to help Vermont fight, they can give money too. So this threat from these giant companies was really chilling to Vermont legislators. They, even though they believed in the law, they did not want to subject the taxpayers in Vermont to an expensive fight. But the idea that they could raise other money to help for this legal defense fight really freed them from that threat of these big companies.
And one of the ways that people can contribute to that fund is to buy Food Fight ice cream, right?
So in Vermont, Ben & Jerry's renamed one of our iconic flavors, chocolate fudge brownie, into Food Fight fudge brownie. And that was a way to help people in Vermont get engaged in the issue. That flavor was sold in scoop shops in Vermont. And then when those same big chemical and ag companies brought the Food Fight here to Oregon, Ben & Jerry's brought Food Fight fudge brownie out here to Oregon. It's being sold in Ben & Jerry's scoop shops in Oregon to raise awareness for the issue. You know, as we said when we brought the flavor out here, there's a lot of pressure on Food Fight fudge brownie. It's undefeated so far. It's 1-0 in the GMO fight, and we're hoping it's going to push things through here in Oregon also.
So folks may not know this, but the threats of the introduction of GMO beets and GMO canola to Jackson and Josephine counties have led farmers there to call for a ban on GMOs in their region, and they actually passed bans in both of those counties. Do you see Vermont farmers calling for similar bans?
You know, I haven't heard anything about that. And, you know, the fact that farmers here in those two counties did that was incredible. Because the opposition spent a lot of money trying to convince people it was not the right thing to do, and the farmers and the community members stood strong. I don't think we have those same issues in Vermont, but I would not be surprised. You know, one reason I'm so happy and excited to be out in Oregon is I think there are a lot of similarities between Vermont and Oregon. There's a real strong environmental ethic. There's a real strong feeling about local food and healthy food. And, you know, kind of when I walk down the street, sometimes I feel like I could be in Vermont.
Okay, yeah. Chris, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, I am Chris Miller, and I am the activism manager at Ben & Jerry's.
So during the hearings on Vermont GMO labeling in the state legislature earlier this year, Chris, I think it was you. Were you the spokesperson who were talking about that GMO labeling would not increase the price of a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream? So opponents to this measure are saying that this is going to cost like $400 a year to the average household if we start labeling GMOs. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's sort of a patently absurd accusation on its face. For those of us in the food business, and Jerry's been in the business for more than 30 years, know that small changes to packaging are not something that drives the cost on products. Food companies make changes to packaging all the time. We change the ingredients we use. We change the marketing claims that we want to make. We change the look and feel of the brand design. So changing packaging for food companies is simply a cost of doing business. It's frankly an absurd claim to suggest that adding five small words to the back of a pack is going to increase the cost of food.
Consumer Reports, the independent testing organization, recently did an analysis, and they feel like it would cost less than a penny a day to label for GMOs.
Yeah, I think I read that they said it was going to be $2.30 a year.
Yeah.
not too burdensome.
So sustainability is promoted as a key concern with Ben & Jerry's. Sustainable financial growth is part of your company's mission. And many folks may not be aware that over 60 million acres of GMO seeds are currently pre-treated with neonicotinoid pesticides, which is a class of pesticides which have been increasingly linked with bee loss. There's an international scientific review that has basically come out and said that neonicotinoids are one of the main drivers for loss of bees. And the synthetic neonicotine insecticide is water soluble, so when the seeds are coated with it, this pesticide is absorbed into the seed and then expressed through the growing plant's pollen and nectar. Right now there are Canadian beekeepers that are suing Syngenta and Bayer, two major GMO neonic seed coat makers, for huge bee losses. Of course, we all know that alfalfa is an important forage for the dairy farmers, and just recently Syngenta and Dow have called for increased use of neonicotinoid pesticides and increased residues in the alfalfa crop from the neonicotinoid pesticides. So is Ben and Jerry's...
That must be because they sell those products.
That's an interesting assertion. These are chemical companies that have now acquired seed companies. And in fact, they own a large percentage of the seed companies right now in the world. Yes, so this definitely is an issue. And is this something that Ben & Jerry's might be taking up?
You know, so at Ben & Jerry's, we like to say we're not scientists. And we read the studies, but we are not trained in those areas. What we want to do is fight for consumers' rights. Essentially, we're consumers too, and we want to run the company the way a person on the street would run the company. We don't want to be some corporate bigwigs. We want to be standing up for the average person. Ben & Jerry's has had a history of fighting for transparency when recombinant bovine growth hormone was first introduced into the dairy industry 20 years ago. Ben & Jerry's said we weren't going to use it, and we put copy on our packaging talking about it. We actually had to sue in order to get the right to talk about what was not in our product. And so now it's the same issue with GMOs. We just want to be transparent. And we want the burden to be on corporations to tell people what's in the products. Consumers should not have to become research experts to figure out what's in products. It just ought to be on the package.
So do you have any suggestions for what the average folks out there can do to help to drive this move towards labeling of GMOs?
Well, the first thing here in Oregon is to vote. There's a state ballot initiative. It's all vote by mail, so it's no burden. If you're not registered, you can register. I think the deadline to register is October 14th. It's very easy to do, and you should be out there talking to your friends. The opponents, people from the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Monsanto, Dow, are spending millions and millions of dollars. They're putting on television ads to try to confuse people and to try to make up stories about increased costs. And, you know, it becomes effective when they spend so much money trying to confuse you. And I think people in Oregon have to say, we are not confused. The only thing that's confusing is, why would companies not want to tell you what's in their products?
Okay. Did you have anything further that you wanted to say about this issue?
I am thrilled to be here. I'm out here for a week. I'm visiting Ben & Jerry's scoop shops. There's information about the ballot initiative in all the scoop shops. We've got a couple of billboards here in Portland. We're trying to register people to vote. And I think Oregon can be the first state to pass a ballot initiative. What you guys can do here is what was not able to happen in California last year, was not able to happen in Washington State. They were so close, but I think we're right on the edge here.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you.
It's great to talk to you.
And that was Jen Davis right here from KBOO speaking with Jerry Greenfield. He was the co-founder of Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, and they were discussing his support for Oregon ballot measure 92. Let's listen to an announcement, and then we're going to go to the top of the hour with Air Cascadia.
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. The event includes live music, local artists, a live and silent auction, and more, and takes place at Holocene. The Gifford Pinchot Task Force mission is to protect and sustain the Gifford Pinchot National Forest and neighboring communities through conservation, science, and advocacy. Again, that's Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And you're listening to KBOO Portland. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support during our recent membership drive. We ended early with your support and very successfully. It was a great fun drive. Thank you so much for calling in and going to the website and lending generous support to this wonderful KBOO community radio station. Coming up at 10:15 this morning, Flashpoints reports on the case of New York Times journalist James Risen caught in DOG's crosshairs. Also, a new speech by Flashpoints regular contributor and former high-level CIA analyst Ray McGovern. At 11 o'clock on the food show, Fermentation Festival or co-organizer David Barber previews this year's festival. Ian Harris talks about Dutch ovens, and Gabby De Leon and Danielle Knott talk about Render. It's a new feminist food and culture quarterly in KBOO. But right now, we're going to go directly to Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO today.